Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I hope you guys are having a beautiful day today, and thank you for spending part of it with me. Now, in this episode, I'm excited to share the wisdom from the amazing Megan Asha, who is the CEO of Founder Made, which is a platform and conference series that connects best-in-class consumer brands to retailers, distributors, and investors. Now, under her leadership, Founder Made has partnered with innovative brands, including Estee Lauder, RX Bar, Bulletproof Coffee, Vital Proteins, Target, and Starbucks. And when Megan isn't helping consumer brands thrive, you can catch her on national TV shows like CNN, The Today Show, Fox Business News, and QVC. And she's also been profiled and quoted as an expert and entrepreneur in business publications like The New York Times, Forbes, and Entrepreneur Magazine. Now, Megan has achieved an incredible amount of success, but the success that also includes fulfillment in her life didn't come until she chose to connect with her truth so that she could align with her purpose, letting go of doing things just to belong or to prove herself. Now, there is so much freedom in that, to finally choose you, to break the conditioning or the people-pleasing, and to follow what's meaningful for you. Today, you're going to hear Megan's journey from being unsure of herself and not feeling like she belonged, to quieting the voice of her inner critic, discovering her purpose, and building a multi-million dollar company. And Megan shares the moment that she found the courage to speak up for herself. And she also talks about the life-changing advice she was given to follow the breadcrumbs and to tune into what she loved and was good at so that she could discover her mission and future business. Now, we also discuss the messy reality of building a business and the importance of practicing the power of positive perseverance. Now, when you practice positive perseverance, when you want it badly enough and you find a way to stick with it and figure it out, that is when you make your dreams become a reality. And in this episode, Megan shares the three patterns and behaviors that she commonly sees in entrepreneurs that are holding them back. And she also shares how building up others has supported her in achieving her success and risen higher than her childhood self could have ever dreamed of, so that you can too. Now, there's a lot of powerful takeaways for you in today's episode that you can apply to your life to discover and live your purpose and to make your vision become a reality. So, guys, let me know what you think of this episode and please share it out, as you never know who may need the message and inspiration that today's episode brings. So go ahead and take a screenshot of the podcast that you're listening to. Tag me on Instagram at I am Stephanie Kwong when you share it out. And know that I am always so grateful to all of you who have taken a moment to share out the episodes that you listen to. I see it and I appreciate it. So thank you. All right, let's do this. Here's Megan. All right, Megan Asha, welcome to the Rise Higher podcast.
Thank you for having me. I love the mission of this podcast. It's amazing.
Of course. And being totally transparent, guys, this is take two.
We're the Perseverance podcast.
That's what it is. I mean, we're talking about rising higher. We have been doing that for the past 30 minutes.
Awesome.
We've been getting Megan's sound going. We started the interview and I only hit record on one of my mics and not the whole thing. And so, whoo, this is all about bouncing back, right? And knowing that we are going to make this happen. It's now actually happening. And I'm so grateful again to have you on the show, Megan. Your story is so powerful, and what you have created is extraordinary. Like, I really, really love what you've done. I said this in the first round, I'm going to say it again, but, and just to give everybody a quick blip of what FounderMade is, your company, you are CEO of FounderMade. It's a platform and a conference series that connects the consumer brands and the beauty, the wellness, and food to retailers, distributors, and investors. And I really see that as like you're making people's dreams and visions come true and being the conduit for that to happen. So I think that is so amazing. Kudos to you. I can't wait to share how it came to in existence because it wasn't like something you planned. But to kick us off, you are a super connector. You bring these people together. And it's really interesting that you are a super connector now and having people belong in a space where, you know, when you were growing up, there was a time when you didn't feel like you truly belonged. And as I mentioned, you know, I absolutely know that feeling being an Asian girl growing up in a all Jewish neighborhood. You had something similar. And I would love for you to share your story about how, you know, as a kid, how you didn't feel like you belonged, but how you rose above that. Cool.
It's interesting because I think that's part of what has shaped me in wanting to make, you know, entrepreneurs belong and feel good because it's so hard. But when I was a kid, I was the only, you know, I was only multiracial kid in elementary school, and it was all white, all Caucasian school, and so I literally would come home from school and my mother was Caucasian, my father was from India, and I'd, you know, put my hand next to hers and be like, "Mom, you know, I know, like, you know, I knew that I was obviously mixed, but it was just, you know, why can't I be this skin color?" It was like very, it was so interesting to just know I was different and really think about the fact that I was different. And my mom would come to school and try to make me feel better and try to like integrate, you know, me being half Indian by wearing, she's a blonde woman and she was wearing saris and bringing Indian food. And I would just like hide in the back of my class. And it was an interesting time where I just didn't really have my footing and I felt different. And I think that kind of shaped my whole, you know, elementary school, and then just in general. And I think that, you know, as a child, if you don't feel like you fit in, I think you go through times in your life where in different phases of your life where you don't feel like you fit in. And so there's mm-hmm. that searching aspect. And I think that, you know, I definitely did that for a long time. And then other phases, yeah. You know, I worked in finance. I was one of two, you know, women in the morning meetings in finance. And it was really interesting how we were treated. And I thought it was my first job out of college. So I thought that was the way that, you know, men were treated one way and women were treated in another. And we were, you know, the you know, young girls and this is how it's going to be. And so I laughed things off that I now in retrospect wouldn't have laughed off. And, mm-hmm. I want to make sure that people know that when they feel different and they don't feel aligned with, their truth and they're feeling, you know, bad about themselves, whether you're with your best friend or you're, you know, in a work environment, it's okay to get centered and understand what is making you feel bad. And it's okay to speak up because I think I didn't speak up and I didn't protect myself when I was younger. And I really think it's really, really important that you do because you don't realize the long-term ramifications of you not speaking up and speaking your truth. And I didn't actually know that until much, much later in my career. Yeah. And it's still like, if there's anything that, you know, I try to impart to, you know, different to our team or anything is like come into your truth and speak your truth and I, you know, and do what's best for you first and then everything else will follow.
Yeah. How did you actually find the courage to really start speaking your truth? Because I know that's really hard for people, right? They almost feel like, well, if I speak up and maybe my truth is not common for what everybody else wants, or maybe it goes against what, is popular, then people really fear getting judged, getting ostracized. Like, I think that's a big one. It's like, I don't want to be abandoned. I don't want someone to leave me, judge me, hurt me. How can you find the courage to really speak your truth, even if it might lead to a consequence that you might not desire?
I mean, I think that the way that you need to fast forward, and I wish I had done this, but you actually need to fast forward to your wiser, older self, or whatever you want to, your higher self, because the thing is, you can let one thing slip. If you continue to do it throughout your life ends up taking a toll, and you only have one life. You only have this time on earth to really, you know, do what you love and, you know, feel good. Frankly, that's the most important thing, is to be happy and feel good. Yes. Because you can't give to others without doing that. And so I think that it's really important for you. And there are ramifications, there always will be, but that's just part of the journey. There's ramifications for any type of chance that you take, and you know,
When was the first time you noticed yourself, you were able to fully speak up, and, just what was that like for you? Because I think, again, for some people, even if they know this, it's still then they're like, well, then how do I really use my voice in a way that, can get it across, but still feel safe to do it? What was that like for you?
I think actually having to build this business, I started speaking up. I actually think that was the first time, I mean, not the first time, obviously, but it was one of the, there were certain habitual things that would happen in my life because I would let things, or I'd let people, certain people into my, it was just the same situation would come up over and over again. And until I decided, that I had to face a lot of things, I faced it through, you know, faced it through the business. And now we love it. We love candid conversations. I think it's really important that people speak their truth here and do what's best for the company and best for our customers.
Yeah. I would even say, just because I know part of your story, it's not even just not speaking your truth, but it's, I would say, be living your truth. Because I would love for you to share even how Founder Made came into existence, right? It came from you discovering that you were living out of alignment. Can you share, talk about that?
Yeah. So my career journey has not been a clear one whatsoever. And so for those of you that are stressed out about what am I supposed to do? How will I know? I used to actually laugh because I would go to these business seminars and I would come up to the speaker afterwards and I'd think they'd know what type of business I was supposed to start. And I was like, instead of the horse whisperer, I would look for the business whisperer. And I was like, so hi, I'm Megan, loved your talk. And can you tell me what business I should be starting? Because I'm a little lost. And like, it was like this very funny thing where I was looking for outside validation into what I should be doing. And the funny part is I landed on what I should be doing. And it was started off just not even being a business. It was supposed to actually, and so I'll just give you like my career journey so you have some context. I started off after I was a psychology major. Then I went to hedge funds and finance because I wanted to impress my father. And then realized my father all of a sudden, you know, he's an entrepreneur and he's like, wait, but nobody's building anything and they're just building wealth. Like I really, so it was like even me trying to please my father in finance it didn't really go that well. And then I ran a digital media platform. And then I went and I did a scarf company when I was applying to business school, and I went back to business school because I didn't think that my last company was successful enough, and I needed to prove to myself more than anything that I was like okay and valid enough to be a successful entrepreneur, and that maybe business school, you know, if I get an Ivy League degree, maybe that will solve my, you know, trying to figure out what I want to do. And, you know, so I do the 2 years at business school and I come out and I'm literally like, okay, I still don't know what I want to do. And I'm still, you know, asking the business whisperer, whoever, you know, or my friends are now success, you know, super successful in their companies. Like what business should I do? And then I was working in venture capital and I was consulting for a couple startups. And I don't know when this question came to my mind, but it said, when you're 90, what will make you happy? And because I knew I was miserable working these couple jobs and not being aligned with, I knew I had something more to give to the world and I didn't really understand how to do it or why. Or so I said, listen, I used to do these dinners, female founder dinners. I used to do these different kinds of dinners. I love bringing people together. I'm just going to do 12 dinners while I'm working these three jobs and I'm going to call them founder made. And I started and I said, I'm going to do them verticalized. It's going to be like founder therapy because I the reason that I ever persevered in my other businesses was because I was thinking about, you know, my friend who, you know, started and got like 200 no's when she went to VCs. Like I literally have like these almost like chicken soup for the entrepreneur's soul type of stories in my head. And that was like what had kept me, you know, going and continuing, like when things would get dark or when I would start doubting myself, I'd be like, okay, well, I know that my girlfriend made $30,000 for a year or whatever, who barely could like live in New York, be starting her company. And now, you know, is now crushing it and has like $1 billion. And I knew that those kinds of stories would help. And so I would bring an entrepreneur who had a story that was like really profound to the table. Had that like war story and at my dinners. And then I'd bring like other entrepreneurs that I thought would be inspired by this. And I'd started verticalizing them. So I did a tech dinner, food, and they kept getting bigger and bigger. After these dinners, and I remember telling my friends, I'd be like, well, I'm just doing these dinners. Like they're nothing. I'm a very like execution oriented, like what is the point of this? Like, is this a business or not kind of a person? And my girlfriend said, who I'll never forget. She said, follow the breadcrumbs. And she's like, you love this. Like, this is your thing. You love this. Just follow the breadcrumbs. And I was like, I didn't really understand. And I am so glad that that advice, and I was around people at that time that like really supported just me being me in the world, because I think in the past, my friend groups or whatever it was, it would have been a different thing. And so at this point, started these dinners, and then it turned, I wanted Daniel from Kind Bar to speak at one of our dinners, and he was launching a book, and his press people said, no, Daniel needs to speak in front of 300 people. And I said, I can throw a 300 person conference. And I just like basically decided that I was going to do it. And we did like an investing in wellness conference. We partnered with Well and Good. I remember like getting, you know, it was from 6 to 9 PM at the Gansevoort and meatpacking. And I had these like gift bags where I ironed on inspirational quotes. It was amazing. Like it was a whole labor of love. I had all these little booths and we did Shark Tank pitch challenge. And we were expecting 100 people, 400 people showed up. It was standing room only. It was a whole thing. I hadn't produced an event on my own. It was definitely a learning experience, and it was amazing. It was amazing. And I just remember being like, this is what I'm supposed to do. But I still thought of it as kind of like a side thing that I just love to do for fun. We started doing these verticalized events, and I was juggling the two jobs. And I remember we used to like selling, you know, booths in the corridor of the elevator bank in my firm. Like it was really a juggle. And then, things just kept like moving and going from there. And, you know, look back, and we've been in business for 3 years. We're, you know, multi-million dollar, but like it's been like a crazy amazing ride. We brought in a CFO who's helped scale a consumer electronics show, CES, which is like one of the biggest.
Yes, huge.
Huge. So he taught us what a trade show was, because I didn't even know we were in the trade show business. But I don't really, I actually think we're so much more than that. But definitely part of the business model is that. So just getting good at that and ops, because you can't scale to like doing 10 booths versus, you know, thousands, like some of the bigger ones do. It's definitely an operations and financial thing. So,
yeah. You know what I really love, and I just want to point this out that you shared in your story is, and I want to go to 90-year-old Megan, by the way, because I think we just breezed over her, and I know there's a bigger part of her story in your story, but that you really almost, you checked in with yourself and was like, what, you know, what would really light me up? Like if I'm 90 and I looked back on my life, what would I have wanted to create? And I just love that you started to tap in to the things that bring you joy, that you're also good at, that you loved, and that it revealed itself to you of what you were supposed to create. And that when the opportunity was like, well, Daniel from Kind Bar is only going to speak if there's 300 people, you're like, okay. And then all of a sudden you like throw this huge event, and that like opened up so many doors, and truly your mission that you're on right now came from you just saying yes. And so I really want to highlight that, because I think we don't often know what the path is going to be, but as long as we keep following the trail of what brings us joy, that it'll lead us exactly to where we want to go. Because I know a lot of people ask the question, like, what's my purpose? What should I be doing? And we crowdsource answers.
Where is my business whisper? And you don't know. And it's interesting because I don't even think I knew until like years later how this was going to turn into a business. And I still think that we're on V1 of what Founder Made actually is going to do in the world. But I think part of it is, and people, it's funny because the amount of no's that we got when we started, we got this book that was called Reject Me, I Love It, I Love You, or Reject Me, I Love You. It's like, it's literally the funniest book. It's all on Amazon. And I would hold it up to, it was me and our CRO now. And I would literally, like, when we would get a no, we'd just like hold up the book and we'd just be like, we knew that part of perseverance was just getting a ton of no's. And we knew that, and we knew that part of finding the business model was going to be a ton of hurdles, and it wasn't going to be an easy thing. Or actually, I didn't know. We went through it. I didn't know really how.
Yeah,
there was all these lessons that started happening, and I'd be like, oh, okay, we're in the trade show business. We are not equipped for 100 booths. Things that we hadn't really anticipated. And then when you realize when you're in business that it's supposed to be messy, but I think it's human nature to think that things are supposed to be perfect because you have visions of how things are supposed to be. And you have this like perfect vision, but then you have the reality. And so you're always striving for the perfect vision. And a lot of the times, if you're not careful, you're comparing that perfect vision It really is supposed to be messy when you're starting out. It really isn't supposed to be clean. It's not supposed to be perfect. If it was perfect, everyone would do it and they would persevere. But it's knowing that you are in business and you're basically just solving problems. And even when you're at, you know, tens of millions, 50 million, 100 million, you're just solving bigger problems. And the only way you can get past these different hurdles of scaling your company is knowing that you're going to have to solve these types of different problems, you know, at scale and at different stages.
Yeah. I love your attitude around the reject me, I love you, because that's probably one of the biggest things that stop people, not even just as an entrepreneur, but in life. Like, we don't want to do something because we're afraid of the rejection, right? And what that means about us. But when you made it fun,
how many no's can we get? Great. And the thing is, I think it's so important that you do that, because you're going to, this part, it's really part of the journey. It's like, how many different no's? And then also, obviously you can get thousands of no's, but if you're not looking at why you're getting no's and reworking whatever it is. And then I also, the other one that I love, and this I think is like a Gary Vaynerchuk's, which was go towards the love. And so I would say to our team, I'd say, go towards the love. Like, anytime, like, there are going to be customers that love us, just go towards them and everything else will fall into place. So, like, we may not be good for certain companies, but there's going to be a ton that love us. And and it's interesting, even like we had gotten so many no's when we first started. And then it's so funny because every year, and I always laugh, like they, you know, the people come back and you're like the ones that said no, all of a sudden are like, oh my God, you guys have grown so much and blah, 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 blah. And you know, and it seems like it's an overnight success. And you're sitting there and you're like, no, I actually sat with this business for a couple years, or, you know, a good amount of time. And I remember like you not thinking that this was like, we were built a lot. It's been interesting to see the whole journey and how people, you know, now say like you guys are so successful, all these funny things, but it wasn't like that. And there wasn't very many people that believed in us when we first started, you know?
What were the kind of the things that you really had to lean into to keep yourself moving forward? Because I'm sure there were those times when it got really hard. And I've had moments in time in my own business where I was questioning whether I should shut the door and go do something else. Because being an entrepreneur can be really challenging. But there are things that I've leaned into that have helped me stay the course. What did you do to keep yourself in the right frame of mind or in the right state of being to be able to keep trudging forward when it was not like in the beginning phase, and even when you're solving the big problems now?
Well, I think in the beginning phase, I mean, I remember like crying in our stairwell when we just make the office rent. I'm like, here, I just signed this lease and I don't even know how we're going to make rent. You know, and that was like one of those moments in time where and it's so funny now to even like the rent's the last thing that we even think about. It's like, you know, we're looking for like these executive hires, and it's like a funny thing how things have changed and progressed. But honestly, I think there's a combination of things. Like, number one, sometimes you need to get off, like sometimes you just need to take a break. I look at being an entrepreneur as climbing a mountain. And so sometimes you get on the trail and you're like, this is the most beautiful trail. This is amazing. I'm having a great time. I'm going to have a sandwich. You know, this is beautiful. I'm so glad that I did this. And then there's other times the trail, you're like, I got myself on this hill. How the hell did I get me off of this? I'm lost. I don't know where I'm going. You know, or I'm tired. I'm hungry. Like, I'm hot. Like, whatever the thing is as you're hiking this trail. And so I love that. I think about that as we're doing this. And sometimes it's the best thing you can do on a trail, right? Is all of a sudden stop, like take a break, take care of yourself. Like, you know, whatever you need to do, eat a sandwich, like whatever, the thing that, and it's okay. And sometimes you're going up the trail and you're meandering, and at times you're shooting straight up and you can, you know, you can see where you want to go, and just, but that's part of the journey of building, is that it's never, it's a combination of emotion and a combination of really persevering through the path. So,
yeah. So taking the break for yourself, that's been helpful for you. And then of course, allowing yourself to cry in the stairwell when you need to, because I've had those moments. I was like, just hold my hair back. I'm gonna need to cry.
It's so okay. Everyone has done it. It's totally okay to do. And if you aren't doing that, then I don't know, then you're not in the game. The funny part is I laugh. I'm like, oh, I'm so stressed. Like sometimes I'll be like, oh, you know, I was voted most stressed in high school. I think I'm the most energetic. I think that I've found something to channel my energy, but I'm like, okay, you're stressed about this business, but guess what? Like, you would have been stressed about what you're not doing and finding your passion. So pick which one you want it to. And the perseverance one, it's fun to kind of see it the way and see all those lessons in life. And I think it's like the universal lessons of truth, which is if you want something bad enough, you just persevere and you'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And me and the team, we all want this bad enough to keep going and work hard and get it to the next level.
Yeah. What is, cause I know that we all have our war stories. What's one of your big war stories of like the big growth moment for you, whether that's who you had to become inside of your business or for your business? Cause I always tell people, I'm like, look, if you want to grow, either get in a relationship or become an entrepreneur or have a baby. Like that will grow you like crazy because it kicks up all your stuff to look at like what works and what doesn't work in terms of your perspectives or your behaviors or your habits. But what were some like maybe a big moment for you, like a growth spurt or a war moment what you went through that you rose above from?
Great question. So in terms of, so 2017, we launched our Discovery Show, which was, it was the brainchild of, we were doing these verticalized events, Future of Food, Future of Wellness, Future of Beauty. We combined all of them. And I said, listen, our North Star is being the World's Fair for consumer goods. Why don't we combine all these different sections and let's put on, you know, the best trade show that anyone's ever seen in New York City, right? So we get 100 plus exhibitors. This is before we really even, you know, had really knew that we were in the trade show business. And we, you know, I knew that morning when we were loading everybody in, and in trade show business, you load everyone in the day before, like there's a, you have a production person, I had my co-founder at Google, like she was, you know, trying to do production. It was, the whole thing was a little, it was like we knew, and I knew that morning. And I remember there was something that I started saying to myself during the day because I could just tell that the show wasn't going to go well at all. And I kept saying winning and learning. We were like setting up, we were all setting up tables. We were doing a lot of manual labor. It was very interesting, that show. Because we weren't like set up as a, like we just didn't know what a trade show was supposed to be. We didn't know, we were just outsourced and get a real production agency. I mean, we were bootstrapped the business, and that was mm-hmm. the thing. And so on Saturday, I think we got an email that, so we had the show Friday and Saturday, and we got an email, and it was, you know, CCing 35 of our customers. It was one like very enraged exhibitor. And she said like founder made, you know, is, you know, didn't, isn't that their word or what, it was something, it was like, it was a very special, it was an email title, and it was basically, you know, saying there was just a lot of issues with the show. And, you know, when you're in show business, it's a whole different thing because all of your clients are there at the same time. If it's not a good show, they all talk to each other. And so it was, and this was our first big trade show. And I spent like basically a month calling all of our exhibitors that were unhappy and making good on our promise. And that was me and the team basically going in and saying, okay, how are we, if there's an issue in the business, or if we didn't deliver what we said we were going to deliver, how are we going to face it? And how are we going to make good? And so we, you know, between me and my CFO and my CRO, we basically made good on all of our promises. It was like quite the journey to have as many customer calls as we did. And a lot of, you know, companies wouldn't, they just say, okay, customer doesn't like us, but you know, we spent a lot of time trying to win back, you know, the customers and the brands, and we did. And some of them are our biggest customers now, but it was definitely one of those learning experiences. And I say that like there's, you're either winning or you're learning, or you're winning and learning. And that I think was a growth moment for everyone, including me, because it was just how, you know, if you're set with, you know, a certain failure in business. And again, we were having our learning experience, but we were learning in front of all of our clients. Right.
Yep.
I had to say, well, listen, we're a startup helping startup. We're learning just with you, but let me tell you, like you've paid good money. We will come to the table and we'll do whatever we can to make this right. And so I think that was a huge, like just watching our team go through that and watching how people could just, you could say, I'm never going to do a show again. Like, I don't need to do this. Like you could say a bunch of different things, or they're wrong. Like these customers are wrong. You could do all those. We faced up to it and we did the best we could. And we tried to make good on every single exhibitor and promise and improve the show tenfold, learned a lot. I mean, we definitely, the feedback now is like, it's funny because the problems that we're solving now is so radically different than what we solved 2 years ago. So it's great.
Yeah. That's incredible. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, it just goes to show when you make right on things and you just, again, you actually went towards the love, right? You actually made good on your promises. And I think ultimately that's when people do respect you. And if they are can't forgive you for that, then probably not the right customer for you anyway. But I just want to acknowledge you for that, because I know even when Julia was our, for everyone who's listening, I am connected to Megan now because of our dear friend Julia Price, and Julia's working with Asha to, or sorry, with Megan to get your Discovery show in LA, which I'm so excited for. And we're going to talk about that and get everybody in Los Angeles there in October 16th. But she just had the best things to say about you, but what an extraordinary leader you are, how compassionate you are, how you care about your team, how you trust people. When they have visions that come up, you're like, great, go for it, make it happen. And you just really trust your instincts and your intuition on that. And you hire all the right people and really empower them to be their best. So I think that says so much about you. And even just hearing this story, it shows so much about your character that, again, you could have said, screw it, who cares? There's other people out there, we'll just get them next year. But you're like, no, let's make this right. And being that example for your team as well. So, wow. I wanted to drop into something with you because I know this is something that many entrepreneurs also struggle with. And it's when that negative self-talk starts to creep up in your mind, telling you all those nasty things that are not actually forwarding you into what you want, but wanting to hold you back. So in those times when the inner critic starts to pump its voice a little louder, how do you manage that inner critic and keep yourself moving forward towards your mission?
It's so funny because I used to think my inner critic was the thing that would drive me to success. So the more critical I was of myself, and the more like self-flatulation, whatever it is, that was what was driving me. And then what I realized, and this was like, we had an executive coach come in, and she said, listen, you being hard on yourself is actually holding the business back. And you need to stop, because it's really one of the things that it breeds into other people. And so I think, what do you do when you're, I think it's such a hard thing for people who want so much with their life. And I think I honestly think it's something that I still am working on. I think I'm super hard on myself still. And I know that that's, you know, something I have to work on. And so I wish I had a better answer on it.
Well, when she told you that, have you been...
Do vision board. I mean, you could say all those different things, but at the end of the day, it's one of those, and it's funny because all of the people that I'm the most close to are actually extremely hard on themselves, extremely, extremely hard on themselves. And I'm like, how is it that I'm around like these amazing, like New York Times bestseller, like these, all these these high performing people, but they all are all like inside, like hurting them. They're so mean to themselves. It's an insane, insane thing. And I'm like, I can see how beautiful they are. And I'm sure we all see how beautiful everybody is, but it's just such a torturous thing. Life is too short. So,
yeah. Well, and I also know that a lot of times the voice of the inner critic is not necessarily ours to start, right? Because as a child, you weren't coming into this world going, oh my God, look at my chubby rolls on my thighs. When like babies got those little rolls, or I have a weird laugh, or my head's still kind of bald. Like, we're not coming into this world criticizing ourselves, how we look, or about how we're behaving. And sometimes, or many times, when we actually look at like, whose voice is that? Right. And I say that because coming from having an Asian background, it's like there is that, you've heard of the tiger mom, right? There's something real about that. It's not just a tiger mom, there's a tiger dad. I know that their intention was just to motivate to success and to be better. And it wasn't really a critical thing to make you feel bad, but ultimately that's kind of the effect of it, right? But that if we can actually see where this voice is coming from and find that maybe that's what motivated us when we were younger, because we felt like we wanted to perform, we wanted to prove ourselves and to get that love from, you know, our parents, that now it's like really the only love we need is from ourselves. And if we were receiving love for ourselves, how would that look? Would it look like punishing in order to get motivated to achieve, or would it look a different way? So that's kind of what I play with now, because I've learned, I was the same. I pushed to strive and achieve through criticism and being really tough on myself. And I realized that when I achieved my goals, and it usually ended up with not feeling very good even when I got there.
True.
And when I slathered on a lot of compassion, whew, during the journey and like really cheered myself on along the way and acknowledged and celebrated the small wins even, it started to change the game in the journey, and then even when I arrived at the destination that I was aiming for. So I'm still a work in progress, because if I'm not paying attention, it can get real mean up in my head sometimes. But being cognizant of it, I think, is really important, and for everybody all the time.
I love that advice. I think it's so spot on.
Right. Spot on. Oof. Because we wonder, we're like, why don't
passion? It's crazy. My 9-year-old self, who's the coolest, like sexiest, most amazing woman, would hate to hear this. The inner critic would be like, this is, makes no sense. You do realize you're in the prime of your life. You're building with like something that's beautiful in the world, and you're going to sit there and yell at yourself the whole time. Like,
yeah.
Yelling at enough, like the little boy on the field. He's like the star athlete. Like, are you, but that sounds crazy.
I know. It doesn't make it's so crazy.
Sense. It's so sad, but yeah. I don't know.
I would just invite like, people listening, if you guys have that inner judge, right, that critic, it's like, can you tune that voice down and turn up that voice of compassion, or that voice of the encourager, right? Or the person who's celebrating you going, great job, keep going. Rejected, yes, and I love you. Yes. I would actually love to bring in your 90-year-old then, because she might have some words to say, but can you tell us about 90-year-old Megan?
Well, 9-year-old Megan, she jumps higher than everybody else. So I was like, I was voted most spirited in high school as well. So I was most stressed and most spirited. It was very special in cheerleading. And so my 9-year-old, I still jump at the gym. Like I do high jumps like at the gym every day. And so
like
my
toe touch high jumps.
Yeah. Yeah. As I do this class called 30, 60, 90 in New York. And so you might, if I'm ever in a class with you, I'll woohoo. And I do high jumps because
girl.
That's like I think it's the way that I connect with being able to use my body, knowing that this is like a very, you know, this time is precious. And at some point in my life, I'm not going to, but in my mind, then my 9-year-old self is jumping higher. She's like the hottest, like sexiest, coolest, like most evolved, most charismatic, most, she's like the most inspiring, you know, most giving, like my person that I have, you know, that she's my higher self. And so, I look to her sometimes with like, even, and again, like everyone has their different things that they believe in. But I look at like my, at the end of my life, what all the wisdom that she probably has and what all the things like from that perspective, how I build my life and who I would surround myself with and what really matters and what really matters, honestly, like is, you know, number one, finding your center of who you are and what you want to, you know, what you want to give to the world. And then number two is who you surround yourself with, what memories you want to make with and what relationships you want to make. And I really believe that, you know, you can, great. So we, you know, build a massive business that's super profitable, but if you're not actually enjoying it on a daily basis and you're not helping your team grow into like into their dreams, like we're all co-creating our own dreams that founder made. It's not just about one person. It's about like the fact that we not only get to help other people achieve their dreams by, you know, helping them build their own businesses and build their business of their dreams, but also we get to, you know, build ourselves in the process by it. And I always say, like, if you build others and while you're building others up, you'll build yourself. And that's my 9-year-old self. My 9-year-old self would say, or at least what I want on my tombstone at some point is she helped others build. Cause that I think is the thing that I'm the best at. And that's what my mission in the world is, just helping other people build.
Yeah. It's so awesome. And I know your 90-year-old self is probably so wise, and she has all the things to say to you when things get tough. I know that I've checked in with my future self quite a bit, and really ultimately it's always like, everything's going to be okay. That's what she tells me. Girl, everything's going to be okay. It's not worth stressing over. Have some fun while you're at it. But I love that you've got your 90-year-old Megan, who she's the highest jumper, and what a amazing giver and all the things. I know that you, through what you do with Founder Made, you work with other trailblazing women, you mentor them and really support them in knocking down their own insecurities as they're building, and you're supporting them build. What do you think, have you spotted patterns in them of what holds them back? And then how do you support them in rising up?
So we all ask for permission. I think that there's a lot of it's just like me looking for my business whisperer of what business am I okay? It's like the way I used to take calculus, like way earlier than you're supposed to take calculus. And I was trying to please my dad, and I take these classes that I knew I wasn't really that interested in, but I just wanted to take them because I wanted to feel like I was okay. And so I think that a lot of the patterns is, you know, asking for permission on things and being like, am I okay? Or is this okay? Or, you know, my co-founder is telling me that he needs 51% and I should only get 49, and there's not really any reason because I'm doing all the work. Like there's always like funny, these interesting certain themes that happen. And so it's that, like, is it okay? That the question of, is it okay? And not knowing and not getting real transparent feedback and transparent advice on how to build a business and how to, I like to, because I've been doing this so long with and had multiple businesses, I love to have, you know, women, men, whatever, but I love when people ask me for advice, that it's really candid and really tactical, because then I can actually give, and of course, like, I can give like the feedback that I always wish that my younger self, when she was first starting out in business, could have had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love it. So stop asking for permission. If someone was starting out on their, like, if your younger self wished that she had three things, one, stop asking for permission. What are two other things that you would guide her along the way that she would then, if she integrated that, could start to skyrocket and really bring her vision to life?
So one would be, the second one would be, it would be, do not think it's going to be easy. I think when I was younger, I really was like, I was a little bit of a brat. I have to be honest. I was like, oh, I was like looking for the perfect business and I was looking for it to be easy. And if you're going into business because you think it's like, you're gonna have all this freedom and it's going to be so easy, just know that I love entrepreneurship, but I also, it is one of those things where once you're in it, you're so in it. I look at my weekends in my 20s and I spent most of it working, and sometimes not on the right businesses and sometimes on the right time. And I didn't have a balance of life. And I still struggle to have a balance of life, but I think that would be the one thing that when I was younger, I think I had expectations of it being easy. And so when it got hard, I would be like, oh, but I think the business is wrong. I got to switch and do a different business. Right. And you realize, like, no, all businesses are hard. Like, you know, obviously there's different business models and, you know, certain things can be more high growth, but you really have to stick with that. And then the third thing, honestly, is just the perseverance. Like, it's you know, when things get hard, how are you going to handle it? And I think positive perseverance is the number one thing. How can you be like, when things would get hard with our team, like I think one time we were caught in a snowstorm and we were flying for a business trip, and this team that we got kicked off the airline, we were like probably waiting for 8 or 10 hours. Everyone on the plane was grumbly, except for my team. They were smiling. They were like, oh great, we'll go, we'll make friends with everyone in the airport. We'll ride the Zamboni. Whatever the card in the airport, became this like whole thing. And I was like, wow, I was like, this team knows how to turn any issue. Like you can be the grumbling, you choose to be the grumbling person on the airplane, or you choose to live your best life and have it be like the best day of your life. And I think that is a choice. And when business gets really hard, the best thing you can do is just add positive perseverance. And get really ultra positive and be careful about everything that you say and get really, really ultra positive about the future and just start saying what's going to happen and then you'll get there. You may not get there as fast as you want, but I mean, I used to do that with the shows. I would, because the show business, you don't really know how the show's going to turn out. So you were literally having to talk about the future the whole time, get super ultra positive about it and, you know, hopefully deliver on what it was. And now I'm we're in business long enough to prove the model, but it was definitely like the positive perseverance part.
I love it. You know what? I always say, that truly we are the source of, what our reality is, and you are the source, right? Being the leader of your company, and everybody kind of follows suits in a way. And you were the most spirited, and look at what you infused into your team is like them just being spirited, like having that positivity, even in those challenging moments. And I love that, again, it's a choice because the situation is what it is. You always have the opportunity to choose how you're going to perceive it or interpret it and how you're going to behave in the face of it. And I love that positive reinforcement and just really positive perseverance. That's what you said. I'm going to do that. So it's so good. I would love for you to talk more about FounderMade, about your discovery show, because you've got one coming up that I cannot wait to attend, but give us all the goods about FounderMade and what to expect at the discovery show.
So we have an insane amount of amazing beauty, food, wellness launches, products galore. We have incredible, incredible speakers and content. We have the co-founder of Equinox speaking about her journey, and she's really into wellness. She's amazing. We have the founder of Sprinkles Cupcakes. If you guys are a fan of Sprinkles Cupcakes,
huge fan.
We have, just all the best retailers. So Whole Foods, Ulta, Erewhon, I mean, you name it, like all the best retailers. But really, if you want to discover the coolest brand, the best brands that are innovating in the space and food, wellness, and beauty, come to this discovery show. You'll have a lot of consumer discovery, lots of discovery happening. It's the energy is special, and I guess I'm biased, but it's a special, special. My 9-year-old self is smiling, so that's all I have to say. Come enjoy. My 9-year-old self will be smiling for our discovery show on October.
And maybe we can catch you doing a toe touch.
Yeah.
If whoever comes, we'll get you on the stage and be like, woo, and just have you show us what you do in those 30, 60, 90 classes. So the Discovery Show is on October the 16th.
Yep, right? It's Wednesday, October 16th. Yep, and that's in Santa Monica at Barker Hangar.
Perfect. And where can people find more information about it?
You can find it at foundermade.com, FOUNDERMADE.com.
Yes. And you guys, we've got a special gift for you because I love giving gifts. If you go onto the FounderMade site and get your booty to the Discovery Show, which I will be at, and hopefully I'll see you there as well, at checkout, you can use the code FMRISEHIGHER and get yourself 20% off your ticket. And I'm sure when they're there, all the products, samples, and things that they're going to get is going to make up for the cost of the ticket. So I can't wait to go and to hear from all those founders and just to see the magic that you create, Megan. It's really exciting.
Well, thank you for letting me be a part of your magic. This was incredible.
Of course. Oh my goodness. And Before we go though, girl, I got a few more questions for you. We're not done yet. These are the three questions that I ask every guest as we close out the show. So the first is this: what is something unique about you that most people don't know?
What's unique about me? I can't say the toe touch in the class. That is very unique. I have a female cat named, or no, I have a male cat named Barbara, and we've taught her to sit, stand, and roll on command. Talk about perseverance.
Her or you?
It's a little wacky. Okay.
I love it. When you're in a dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
In the mornings I'll do 30, 60, 90, which is this high intensity interval training. And I'll jump and pretend like I'm like a cheerleader in class, even because I feel like the physical thing helps you get out. And then at night, it's great. I have a great husband who he's also an entrepreneur. And so the road is up and down for both of us, in terms of like emotionally, it's a ride. Like, we're so hard on ourselves and it's been a ride, but being able to have somebody that relates to being an entrepreneur, you know, close, and being able to like talk to them about, how to get out of things is really huge.
Amazing. And knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
10-year-old self. Mm-hmm. Be kind to Mego. Be kind to my, be gentle and be kind. I think that's really, it's a long climb. And when you're at the beginning of the climb, you're not supposed to already be at the top of the mountain, and you have to, definitely be kind while you're trying to climb and get to your destination.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. I think as a lesson for all of us, even as we grow older, but definitely starting at that young age, be kind. So good. Megan, I adore you. My new friend. I cannot wait to see you soon, October 16th. You guys at the Barker Hangar in Santa Monica, get yourself to this Discovery show. Let's go have some fun. And thank you for all that you do, Megan, and for sharing your wisdom and yourself on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome.
How awesome is Megan, and how beautiful is her advice to her 10-year-old self to be gentle and to be kind. You know, that really resonates so deeply for me, since that has been one of my greatest transformations, is to quiet the voice of my inner critic and to really amplify the voice of love and kindness. And it's still a work in progress, because I still have my moments where I can be pretty cruel to myself if I'm not paying attention and I'm on automatic, and really learning to pause and to reroute the voice in my mind and the words that I speak to myself to be ones of love and of kindness. You know, I really wish that this was something that was taught in schools, to have kindness and compassion for self, because when we're not trained to turn up the volume of love and compassion and to quiet the voice of the inner critic, it can wreak havoc on our happiness, on our ability to achieve, on our inner peace and freedom, and ultimately how we feel about ourselves. Because no matter what it is that we're doing, whether it's building or growing a business, or going after a dream, or relating to others or ourselves, in order to experience true fulfillment in the moment and along the journey, it's always important to be gentle, to be kind, compassionate, and loving with yourself. Now, if you're a regular listener, you know that I am full-blown passionate about self-love. And if you struggle with insecurities, with self-judgment, or shame, know that you're not alone, and that there is a path to freedom from this. Because through my work in coaching and as a hypnotherapist, I have all kinds of clients coming to me, from CEOs, celebrities, entrepreneurs, and those who struggle with addictions or mood disorders. And while their backgrounds may be different, their inner struggles are all similar. The struggle with feeling not good enough or feeling unlovable run rampant. And there is at least one thing I always prescribe to them, and that is self-love, a heavy, full-on dose of it. because self-love is the salve to negative conditioning and wounding from our past. And you can free yourself of self-doubt, your insecurities, self-judgments, and any sort of shame when you have a more loving relationship with yourself. So if you're the kind of person who's ready to make peace within yourself, to love yourself unconditionally so that you can experience true happiness and be free, then you want to go get my Self-Love Transformation online course that is a step-by-step blueprint showing you specific steps, processes, and daily practices to release the negative self-talk and beliefs and to replace them with love. Now, these are all the teachings, tools, and practices that actually work because I've worked them on myself. And in all the years that I've been coaching and doing hypnosis, I've had thousands of people around the world go through this program, and they've had massive results when they implemented what I shared with them. So things like creating healthy relationships, to pursuing lifelong dreams, overcoming addictions, strengthening family relationships, attracting the love of their life, to achieving personal goals, to, you know, just straight up feeling confident and good about themselves. You know, a lot of people say you just have to love yourself, but they don't tell you exactly what to do step by step. So I kept hearing that complaint, and that is why I designed this course to show you the how in the most clear, simple, and effective way possible. So if you want to find out more details or to get access to the Self-Love Transformation course, go to 40dayselflove.com. That's the number 40dayselflove.com. And I'll also link that up in the show notes for you. And if you are listening to this episode, make sure you use the code LOVE50 at checkout to save yourself $50 off the course. Also, you guys, make sure to check out the Founder Made Discovery Show that is coming up next week on Wednesday, October the 16th in Santa Monica at the Barker Hangar. I'm going to be there, and I really hope I get to see you there too. So you can get more details about the event at foundermade.com. And remember, if you want to get 20% off your ticket at checkout, use the code FMRISEHIGHER. That's all one word, and you'll get your 20% off. All right, if you guys want to connect with Megan and to learn more about her badass company, Founder Made, you can get all of that information in the show notes. And that is over at stephaniekwong.com/EP62. And you can feel free to check out all my other podcast episodes there too. Okay, guys. Until next time, you know I'm sending you so much love.